Hi, I'm Dee, and welcome to the Debrief Show. I'm excited because this show is about bringing out the best in yourself, your teams, and your communications. And this conversation is a good one. We're going to dive into what it takes to build customer partnerships that really last. Not just a buzzword like customer focused, but we're going to think about the mindsets and the behaviours that make a real difference in the customer outcome. We're going to talk to an amazing guest called Dani Bussini, and she's worked with some of the biggest retailers like Tesco, Sainsbury's and Asda, and she knows how to create outstanding customer outcomes through collaboration, insight and communication. She's a category leadership expert. She's a conference speaker, and if you serve customers, I know that you're going to leave this session and take away some ideas that you can implement right away. Hi, and welcome to the Debrief Show. I'm joined by Dani Bussini, and I am so pleased to see you, Dani. Lovely to see you. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me here. Super excited. Thank you for the invite.
Welcome. Well, we've got a few minutes till we go proper live. But in the meantime, where are you dialing in from today?
I'm in St. Albans. So I'm dialing in from St. Albans today. Lovely. St. Albans.
Ah, nice. I'm in the Isle of Wight today. You know, the Debrief Show has never actually been from the Debrief Show studio. I'm in the Isle of Wight. So it's a little bit echoey. I don't know if you can hear it because I'm in an old post office co-working space.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, so I keep on bringing the Debrief from different places. So one day I'm going to be back in the Debrief studio where I should be. I'm delighted to be joined today by Dani Bussini, and she is an expert in customer. She's a customer expert. She knows all about commercial relationships. So she's going to be sharing some of her wisdom with us. So I know you're a conference speaker, a category leadership specialist, and you've worked with some, maybe all of the UK's biggest retailers. So welcome. We're really pleased to have you. Tell us a little bit about your journey. How did you get into this and where are you now, if that's okay?
Right. So my journey started on the shop floor. So I started as a part-time worker, as you do, as a student in a shop, and absolutely fell in love with retail. Really exciting to see how a product gets from a lorry on the shelf, on a basket, in a trolley, on the table, and in our tummies. So that's super exciting. So that's how I started my career. When I finished my studies, I went to work for Sainsbury's head office, worked in their insights team, and that's where my love for category development, relationships, understanding consumers, shoppers, manufacturers, retailers really came to fruition. And that's how I ended up here.
Fantastic. So for those that don't know, what is category management? Let's assume people don't know about the shopper and retailer and haven't worked in fast-moving consumer goods, FMCG. What's category?
Okay, category is a group of products. So you can have the cake category, the biscuits category, the teas, the coffees, categories. And category management is about the strategic thinking of those group of products. What goes on shelf? How it gets displayed? What do we should create to make this category bigger in 10 years' time? What shoppers, what consumers, what retailers are looking for? What's the new thing in the world of coffee, for example?
You know, at the very least, people are going to never shop the same again. They're going to now go into the retailer and go, there's been loads of planning behind where this Kit Kat is on the shelf or where this fondant fancy is on the shelf, aren't they? They're going to be thinking about things differently, which is fantastic. So the reason I really wanted to talk to you about this and be our customer expert for people, even if they're not in category management, but everybody has customers and clients that they could improve their relationships with, presumably. And if they want to, that's great. I know that retail buyers are tough buyers. And I thought, well, if we get your expertise, you can give us some tips that we can use across all sorts of categories, right? Maybe not everything is exactly the same, but if you can do it, then we should be able to do it. So just give us a little bit of insight as to why retail buyers are particularly tough cookies.
They are extremely trained and strategic individuals. They are individuals trained to get results. And our role in manufacturing is to work with them to help those results to have common great growth results.
And it's a very FMCG, the clue's in the name, fast-moving consumer goods. So literally things sell. I remember when I used to work for Vernon Matthews, we sold fresh meat. And literally we were discussing with the retailer that afternoon what label, what price label would go on the fresh turkey. So it really is super fast, right? Whereas some of my customers, their lead time might be year, decade, even if they're making a piece of kit, or it could be very slow moving. Exactly. But fast moving has got to be even more important to have those relationships, right?
Super. And if you think you might go once a week to a shop to buy your food, and if you turn to go into the competition, that's a lost basket. That food is not going back. That basket value is not coming back to my till if you've got to my competition. So I have to make sure that I am attracting you week on week and repeating and keeping you satisfied as a shopper in my shop. And as a retailer, I work with the manufacturers for that. I would work with the manufacturers for that if I were a retailer.
Yes. So you aren't a retailer at the moment, but you have been in the past. You've been both sides of the fence. You've also got that insight that you're going to bring us from both sides, if you like, aren't you?
Absolutely. Yes. So it's good to have been in both sides.
Let's start picking your brain then. So tell me, what's the difference between selling to a customer versus partnering with the customer? What do you think the main difference or differences are?
Right. I love this question. It's deep in my heart about this. So when you talk about selling, it's a 50-50 chance. I've got this pen. I'm here, D. I can sell it to you. I'm offering this to you. You might say yes or no. You will only say if you need a blue pen, right? But if you don't need a blue pen, there is nothing that I can do. So it's a 50-50, it's a sale lost if you don't need it. When I partner with a retailer to offer their shoppers what they need, is about starting from the zero, from the beginning. So what are we trying to achieve? What are your customers, Mr. Retailer, looking for? What is your strategy? What do you want to achieve? What is our strategy as a manufacturer? So I talk about this love triangle, which is the shopper, the manufacturer, and the retailer, because we all work together in order to sell better products to the shoppers.
So you spend a lot of time in customer insights, right? Research about the customer, finding out what they want, and then you I assume the retailer does that as well, but somehow you add value to that. How do you add value to that? Because the retailer must have information as well. Where do you add value?
We work together. We share our findings and we work in a, I think in English you say you sing from the same hen shit or something on those ways. But we understand each other. We are very open on our communication. We drive, create and build trust with the retailer. We have common objectives. And when the objectives are not common, we find a common ground, a common way to achieve both objectives. But in the heart of everything that we do is the consumer and the shopper, because there is no point to put a product on the fixture that's not really interesting to the shopper. And even if it is interesting to the shopper, if the consumer doesn't eat it, they're not going to come back. So there is no repeat rate there.
Tell us a little bit about the difference between a shopper and a consumer, just so we understand fully.
Right. Okay. I love this question. So when can be physically the same person or different people. However, let's going to talk about when it's the same person. So if you think of yourself, 9:30 at night, eating a chocolate, watching your favorite TV program,
Annie, you've been spying on me.
I've known you, Dee. Exactly. So basically, that's the mindset. The mindsets are different. So that's your consumption mindset. It's highly emotional connection there. When you are in your shopping mode, Friday afternoon, I don't know if you're going to do your weekly shop this afternoon or if you go tomorrow to do your weekly shop, you are in a shopping mindset. So you've got possibly a shopping list, either written or on your head, and you are in a functional way. So I need to talk to you in two different languages, one when you're consuming, when you are buying. And I need to be relevant to you with that.
Yeah. So for people that aren't in this category, this is a little bit like the B2B world. So if our listeners sell to a customer and then that customer sells on, it's the same sort of thing that they need to understand those steps. Like, so don't just, you don't just have your marketing package or your message for the customer. If you give it to their customers as well and understand the whole, that understanding the whole journey, I guess, is it?
Exactly. That's a great point. It's understanding the journey, what I say, the chain, and every single point on that chain and everybody that is involved. Yesterday, I was with a manufacturer training them in category leadership. And the interesting thing is we were talking about wholesales. So the manufacturer sells into a wholesaler who then sells into independent shop owners who is going to sell into the end shopper. So it's understanding the whole chain. So as a manufacturer, I need to provide a solution to the end shopper, bearing in mind all the different points of connections, communications, and influencing that will happen.
Yeah. So it might not be a shopper, but it's the user of the product, for example, who's using the scanner. Yeah. So so they might be selling scanners, and that's it might be the person on the checkout using a scanner. That's the person that is going to cause the problems back up the chain if it doesn't work or it's difficult or whatever. That's really relevant, isn't it? So your expertise is one of your superpowers is really getting inside the mind of, well, the customer, right? We're talking about the customer, but presumably then getting inside the mind of each of those people along the chain. How do people do that? If they want to think more about other people, if you like, and be a superpower themselves, how do they go about getting inside the mind of the customer or whoever's head?
Right. First thing is about curiosity. It's about, as a category specialist, curiosity is your keyword. It's either curiosity about consumers, shoppers, retailers, working with people. It's about understanding what people are looking for. So last week you had Adrian in the show, and I use a lot of the learnings from her about understanding emotions behind what we say. When you say something based on people's reaction, just dig deeper to understand. It's all about understanding, clarification, and then providing the solution. So there are several different tools that I've used and I still use to provide, but to get under the skin what people is looking for. And this is actually relevant to any type of relationship, to be honest with you.
Yeah, thank you for introducing me to the Face Whisperer all those years ago. I know you've worked with her a lot, so thank you for that.
And what you learned there, you can use in your whole life, in every area's aspects of your life. So every single bit, a personal or a business relationship, you can use that. And some of the tools that we're going to talk in a minute is equally important.
Fantastic. And she talks about, and I've seen some of the video clips where the shopper's being interviewed by maybe somebody like you saying, what did you think about buying this fondant fancy? And they go, oh, it's lovely. But then their face is going, oh, it's disgusting.
So exactly.
Yeah, so that's really fascinating. So tell us about your secret to successful customer relationships. Have you got any tips or steps that we can take to make sure, not necessarily just for your category, but people like me, people with other customers and clients, how can we have really successful customer relationships?
Clear, honest communication. Three words to remember. Of course, the understanding of what is important for them.
is relevant, and communicate in a way that is meaningful and relevant to them. We can say the same words, but will be understood or felt differently by every single person in the audience. So understand, take time to ask questions. It's not a one-way system, it's a two-way. So take that responsibility for the understanding and to be understood as well.
I like that one-way system. I think so many people, I know from my presenting experience, they do think that the presentation is a one-way thing. They're going to tell them all about their product or their service and then you're going to buy it. But this two-way street that you're talking about sounds like
absolutely
really, really important. So, yeah, clear and honest. I love that you said about honest, because I think when things go wrong, I've seen in businesses that I've worked in before and sometimes with my clients, there is a tendency to prefer not to tell, like try and just hold off the bad news or not to be open. And you're saying we should tell them straight from the start that it's all gone horribly wrong.
Absolutely. Not just it's gone wrong, it's about to go wrong, if you know. So don't hide. Work with your clients as your partners. So they have a vast interest in selling your product and you equally have it. So work together. In previous conversations, we talked about, well, when you launch an NPD, sometimes things can go wrong because it's the first time that you are doing it. And when it goes wrong, it's really important to have the retailer holding the same willingness to make it happen. So, for example, in my career, a few times we have had times that our NPDs were late, for example, to hit the shelf. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a new product would be late to get to the retailer. And by having an open, clear, and very honest conversation, communication with the retailer, we were able to offset that by giving more space to existing products, working together with the retailer to create a promotional program that would not create issues with the category sales. So it's all about that very, very early communication.
Brilliant. Yeah. And I think that's so important in any relationship. But the temptation is to not be open and honest because people are scared, or maybe they hope it will get fixed before the customer finds out. But yeah, any tips to feeling safe to do that then?
Feeling safe. Really building the trust, right? Because if you trust the people that you're working with, you are prepared to work with them in good and bad situations.
So this is about working before it goes wrong, build the trust so that if it goes wrong,
you sell it. Absolutely. Yeah, it's building that trust. So understanding what is important to each other and recognizing that.
And asking good questions, like you said earlier. Brilliant. So in the meantime, tell us, you've been on both sides of the fence, so to speak. So as a supplier, what do we get wrong? Is there anything obvious that we always get wrong or often get wrong?
So we'll get things wrong, right? We are not perfect. But I would probably say the mistake that I see happening again and again and again is that believing that as a manufacturer, what I have or what I have created is exactly what the retailer is looking for.
Of course it is.
Of course not.
Yes, but my machines only make this thing, Danny.
absolutely not. No. We could be part of it, but I've seen again and again, okay, we are going to go to the retailer. It is our once-a-year opportunity to download everything. And there we go, 2, 3, 4 hours of PowerPoint presentations with everything that we created, which is absolutely beautiful product. Might not be relevant to the retailer strategy, to the retailer shopper. So back to our example, if you don't need a blue pen, there is no need for it. There is no usage. So it is about the consistency. So, and the point of contact, continuous point of contact. One thing that I used that I love when I talk to, when I build relationships with retailers, is I provide relevant insights to them on a, it's like in installments, on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, building that trust and having points of contact along the year. So it is not a sprint, it's a marathon, if I were to say.
So you give them like tips on their industry or updates on the latest thinking. Is that the kind of drip feeding that you're talking about?
Absolutely, if I feel relevant. So one thing that I do is store visits quite often. So I go into that environment and I tend to make a comment, send an email, drop a WhatsApp note. Buyers now love WhatsApps. So take a picture of something and go into a different industry. One thing that I used to do that I loved.
I love that tip. Just don't move on too quickly. I love that tip. That's fantastic, because probably the buyers don't have that much time to go into the end user themselves. So I love that you're able to go into the end user. Sorry, carry on. I just wanted to
carry on. Great. But Ethan, if you imagine you're walking into a supermarket, so the half an hour or 20 minutes or 10 minutes that you are there are very valuable to the retailer. If they have as many products as possible that are relevant to you, that talks to you in a way that is what you are looking for, you will buy more, right? So I don't know if you remember, if you are aware, a shop called Build-A-Bear.
A little bit, but not much, but a little bit.
Honestly, an amazing place for retail, a nightmare for parents. You would think that you would go there to buy a bear, a £9 bear, you would end up with a £100 bill, because even a passport that bear would have.
Fantastic. It is
what you think. So my role as a manufacturer is to help the retailer to be relevant to their shoppers, creating product solution to their shoppers.
Lovely. I love it. So a passion of mine, and where we met. So, I mean, we haven't even told our story, but we met when I was working in marketing for Jacob's Creek Wine, and you were in category then, weren't you? And then we went off and did our various things. And then we re-met actually at an NLP training or conference, didn't we, in London. And since then, we just carried on just working together and hanging out together. And, you know, I really enjoy our time together. So thank you for that.
Me too. Thank you.
So we've done loads of personal development together, either attending the same thing or with me being your mentor or trainer on certain things. So tell us, my passion, personal development, and yours. Tell us what key pieces of personal development you have done that's helped you with your career, or you might recommend other people do. We've covered the Face Whisperer. That's fantastic. Yeah.
The Face Whisperer, the NLP practitioner really, really helped. Set of communication, the usage, and being a foreigner. And I remember a training that I had with you about my voice intonation.
Yeah.
And Portuguese being my first language, finishing everything in a high in a British environment was quite offensive sometimes to people. And that was devastating to me. Oh my God, I'm not trying to offend anyone. I'm not intending to offend. So yes, definitely understanding how people feel when I talk to them. Mm-hmm. That was very important.
Yeah, there was that's 2 points on that. There was the finishing at the end of sentence was making people question what you say and not being certain. And then there was the hard, you kind of like the direct end, which made it feel like a bit hard and aggressive, which you didn't realize because everybody talks like that where you're from. So, yeah, it's about softening that a little bit, which was more acceptable to the British language. Yes. So we talked about that. And for those that don't know, NLP is neuro-linguistic programming.
Yeah, a few days ago, I found a very old video. I was actually quite, I had no intention to be hard, but it was really hard. Oh, hey, And it was really said, oh my God, I'm so glad I had that training. So hopefully I'm slightly better now. So if not, let me know.
We're all better. We're all improving all of the time, aren't we? And carry on.
I was going to say insights, the colours insights. So yeah. Good too.
I've got my Brixie somewhere.
Can you?
Insights, discovery.
Yes.
Little colour Brixie.
Absolutely.
And you said about adapting to people. So that's how you learn one of the skills that you learned to adapt to your customer.
Yes. And so understanding myself and then adapting. So acting as a chameleon. So in English, horses for courses. So if I sense that someone, so first is learning to spot someone's colors without actually them telling you. And secondly, communicating with them. That is their preferred way of receiving a communication or information. So definitely, if I'm talking to a red person, be brave, be bold, be gone, basically. Mm-hmm. If I'm talking to someone green, paying a bit more attention on the feelings. Blue will definitely need a few numbers on my presentations. Where yellow, I can just sit down and have a chat, basically.
Lovely. Yeah,
so that was perfect for me. That really helped a lot.
Fantastic. We've got an episode on that I did with Melanie Donblyde. So I'm not sure what number that is, but that's one of the previous episodes. If you want to learn more about personality styles, that's in there. And I remember working with you on fondant fancies or something, or cakes around when you were doing a conference presentation, weren't you? And you've always been a brilliant speaker. So I haven't helped you be, any more brilliant speaker. But what I did bring was that structure, Simply Amazing structure. To help you with that conference presentation. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. I need to correct myself. I still sometimes call it the format. I need to remember about SaaS.
The old name. Yeah, that's
exactly. Longer. But honestly, SaaS is something that stays with me and I do in everything to communicate, all the way from communicating with my children, not children anymore, but communicating with my customers, with friends, family. It's an absolutely brilliant way to structure my thinking. So it's the first point when I have to say something, present something, it is about creating. Why is this important? What do I have to say? How do I want them to act? And what is in for whoever is listening to me? So taking the audience as my key point and then working around it. And I remember doing several bias presentations where with the why was the element of let's going to give a little bit of a scary moment, but in a way that is catching their attention, telling them what they need to do, how you would like them to do it, and what is in for them.
Fantastic. And I love that it can add value to somebody who's already so good at presenting. It's nice that it can add value at that level as well. And all of my clients who use it across everything, like you do, Dan, when you apply it to all communication, not just the presentation, whatever that is, but, all communications, that's when you get the biggest difference. So you are just a sponge. Whatever you learn from whoever, you take it on board like a fantastic sponge. So, our time's coming to an end already. I could carry on forever. But before we go, we are going to ask people to take some action. But before we do that, where can people contact you, Danny? We're going to put all your details in the show notes attached to the newsletter. And we're going to ask people to sign up to the newsletter in a moment. But have you got a favorite channel or favorite place? Where do we catch you?
LinkedIn is great. Drop me a note on LinkedIn. My mobile number will be on the show notes. Send me a WhatsApp. Send me an email. But Fusion for Growth is here to help you to drive better, bigger, collaborative relationships with your customers.
Fantastic. Brilliant. I'm sure you'll get loads of interest in that, which is brilliant. So we do like asking you to take some action. So as you're listening to this, what I suggest you do is think about one thing that you're going to stop doing with your customers or start doing with your customers. As something that like you've taken from Danny's insights, what will you stop doing or what will you start doing? And we'd love to hear from you in the comments after the show. If you're watching this on rerun, thank you very much for watching. And please still put in the comments, let us know what you're doing. And Danny will keep an eye on this and answer any questions that you have. So we would love to thank you, Danny, for your time. Thank you so much for joining us. And any last things that I haven't asked you very quickly before I say goodbye, is there anything that I haven't asked, I should have asked you?
Not questions, no. Thank you so much for having me. And be curious, ask questions.
Love it. Thank you, Danny. Really appreciate your time. And if there's anything else, we'll pop it in the show notes.
Thanks, Danny. And thanks for listening, everybody. What stood out for you in this episode? Was it about asking better questions? Was it about building long-term trust? Or maybe just showing up when things get tough? This show was packed with insights that you can adapt and apply right away. I hope you enjoyed the show, and please follow, rate, and review us. And wherever you're listening, whether it's on Apple or Spotify or on YouTube, there's a playlist called D. Clayton, The Debrief Show. Please share it with colleagues and friends or anyone else you think would find it helpful. And that's your debrief for now. Catch you on the next episode.